Good morning, everyone. I'm an alcoholic, and my name is Yvonne. My sobriety date is April the 14th, 1987. Okay, a little about myself. I started to drink. I had my first drink at 12, and then I didn't drink for another 4 years. And then when I started to work at 16, when I leave school, I was working with a bookkeeper. And this is how I know that I was born an alcoholic. This bookkeeper told me that his hair was dropping out. And I came up with a brilliant idea. I told him that I would get the yolk of an egg and some brandy and rub it in the root of his hair. And that would help his hair to grow back. But his hair got the yolk of the egg and my stomach got the brandy. And only an alcoholic could come up with an idea like that. And I was only 16 years old, you know. And then I continued drinking, and I remembered at the age of 32, I ran out of doctors. I used to go to doctors to get time home from work, and I went to this doctor. I thought it was a doctor, but it was a psychiatrist. And when I stepped into his office, he looked at me and told me, I look older than his dad, that was 79 at the time, and that I am an alcoholic. That didn't bother me. The part that bothered me is when he took my money and gave me 3 days home from work. That is what bothered me, you know. And I continue drinking in and out of institutions. You know, I tried on 5 occasions to kill myself. Even that I couldn't get do. The last thing I did in 1986 is lay down in front of a bus. You know, I reached that. I know today it was the jumping off point in my drinking. In Barbados, we drink in rum shops, sit down at corners and things, and drink, you know. And in 1987, that was my fifth admission to the psychiatric hospital, because we didn't have any rehabs in Barbados for women at the time. And I remember that morning I was drinking white rum and chasing with colored, and I fell down. I went home and I fell down, and I got up. And I made a call to the psychiatric hospital and told the doctor there that I was third being beaten by alcohol and I'm coming in. And that is when I had my last drink. I went into that psyche and I went into Alcoholics Anonymous, and that is the time I listened. I lose everything, my job, everything. The first thing alcohol took from me was my self-respect. I didn't have any respect for God, man, nor the devil. You know, I like to say that I never went to bed with an ugly man or an ugly woman yet, but always wake up with one. I wonder how wonder how that get there. You know, and the hurtful part about that is that, like, a Sunday I go partying the Saturday night, and the Sunday morning I come to and see this thing alongside of me, and I can't put it out until the evening, because the people going to church, so I don't want them to see the garbage that I brought in. You know, and that is the hurtful part about it, and will tell myself, this can't happen to me again. And the only time it stopped happening was when I got into Alcoholics Anonymous. This wonderful program, everything that I own today, Alcoholics Anonymous gave me. You know, when I first came into the program in Barbados, we didn't have many women in the program. Up to now, it's more men than women. So I had to get a male sponsor, you know, to guide me through the steps. And because the steps is me. And by working this program in my life a day at a time, admitting and accepting deep down that I cannot eat nor drink alcohol in any form a day at a time, you know, and admitting that I was insane. I'm still a little insane, but it's a little better today, you know, and then turning my will and my life over to the care of God as I understood Him. I knew for sure that I was mad. But I didn't think that I was insane, but I know I was mad, you know. Because I remembered one time I threw some oil all through my house because I wasn't happy in it. It was a house at the time, not a home. And then I couldn't find the matches because I wanted to burn it down. It was the house that was causing me to be unhappy. I never once looked at the alcohol. Not that thing, not that precious thing. I never looked at that. You know, and so then when I came in and they told me God to turn my will and my life over to the care of God, I had divorced God for a long time, you know. Alcohol had become my God, my all. You know, I used to tell people, you know, that I thought I was so bad that the devil kicked me out of hell and sent me to a place called Hellville. I was that bad, I thought, you know. But when I came in here, they told me that I was a sick person walking the road and I didn't know, you know. And as I applied these principles in my life, I started to get better. I started working with others. I started helping people, you know. And up to today, this is what I do. I go all out and help other alcoholics, you know. I work at a rehab center helping others. I go to the islands, the Caribbean islands. Sometimes I go to Trinidad, go to St. Vincent. I go to Antigua. I came back from Antigua in April this year. I went down there and I did a marathon. I did one in St. Vincent. You know, many times I had to leave my job. Good thing I was working with an alcoholic. I can say he's an alcoholic because he confessed he's an alcoholic. And I would just tell him, well, I got to go to St. Vincent to help some person. And he would say, go on. And I would get on a plane and I go to St. Vincent. And sometimes 4:30 in the mornings, I got to get at that person home before the fella leaves to go and buy a newspaper. Because he would leave home about 5 o'clock to go and buy a newspaper and never get work, nor get back home. End up in the rum shop. So I had to get there and talk with him and his family, you know, and I would use the big book and deal with the family afterwards when I'm dealing with the wife and children, you know. And this is something that today I feel this is what my higher power saved me for. To help others and to work with others. And it is something that I love to do, you know. But I don't take the credit. Anything that belongs to my higher power, not me. He works through me, you know, to help other alcoholics, you know. And I'm grateful today. You know, I'm one of the people that when I say I'm grateful, I'm truly grateful to Alcoholics Anonymous for giving me a life. I don't say another life because I didn't have a life. Any person like me that get up 3 o'clock in the morning, whatever time I come to and I open my eyes, I'm looking for alcohol till I pass out. And then I come to again, you know. So that, I don't call that a life. What I have today is a life. Today I am living. Today I am the only proof of the big book. For certain people, that this program really works. That same psychiatrist that told me that I look older than his father, you know, after I got sober, he used to show me off to his other friends, take me to hotels and things, and said that it could work for her, it could work for anybody else, because He is one of the guys. I had to say, I'm the only person with a certificate. I have a certificate home that says, I am a hopeless chronic alcoholic, and there's no hope for me. And they just kicked me out of the psychiatric hospital and sent me home to die at the age of 36. They sent me out. I lose my work, I'm out of my job, medical unfit. You know, but I found hope in Alcoholics Anonymous in step two. That every meeting I come to, it will be a surety that my God will restore me to sanity a day at a time. If I rightly relate to Him, if I clean house, you know, so that He can get in here and do His work. And that is what I do on a daily basis, cleaning house. You know, because a lot of garbage. They had a lot of garbage in there. You know, and I'm one of the persons that they share openly about me. When I put my garbage outside, whoever wants it could have it, because it is not mine anymore. You know, so you can have it. You know, and I did all sorts of things out there. I wouldn't fill up your head with that. But AA in Barbados, we have a very good thing going there. You know, a fella from Canada came to Barbados and he started that program. And as I heard, after he got drunk, and then this fella, Tony V, he then picked it up. And he and a fella named Ulrich R, you know, and they carried the message. I'd not call it in Barbados, I'd be dead or living in the psychiatric hospital with a wet brain, had not for this blessed program, you know. This program, when I came in this program, the psychiatrist told me that I was actually going blind. I had something growing on my eye, I felt, and it was very close to the baby. Now, when I was drinking, I would feel this thing in my eye like a grip when I first come out on mornings when the sun hit me, you know, and time I drink two rums, no more pain. I don't feel it anymore. You know, at one time, my kidneys used to give me trouble. And I said that I used to go in the sand hole with the guys. I used to be with the guys. And we would go up a sand. But I only used to go with them. At that time, you had to shovel up the sand on the truck. And I would only go with these people just to get alcohol. But one day, lift up some of the sand and they throw it on the truck. Then my kidneys start worrying me, hurting me. And I come up with a brilliant idea again, that I sprain my kidneys in the sand hole. Now, I believed that until I got in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I know that it was, they know it was the alcohol that was mashing up my kidney. How could I sprain my kidneys? It's not a finger, you know. Another thing that happened, my hair was dropping out in patches, the alcohol, because when I was drinking, I couldn't buy shampoo, nothing. So, not only started selling shampoo, deodorant, perfume, colognes, and perfumes, and different things in 1987. All the rest of the time, all the sale was alcohol. Couldn't buy them things, couldn't buy underwear, couldn't buy brassiers, nothing, you know. When I remember that my first AA meeting when I left the psychiatric hospital, I had to wear one of my boyfriend underwears to my first meeting. I didn't have a pair of shoes. A young woman working in government for good money. And I used to work for the rum shops. As I get my salary, it goes straight to the rum shop. And I would ask them things like, I had rice from you. I had pork from you. All this money, $300-something just for alcohol. I couldn't believe it. You know, but I can pay it because I want more. You know, and as I said, my hair started dropping out in patches. And when I come from work, the fellas would be singing patches, that song, patches. And, you know, and they would be singing and laughing at me. You know, at that time, I used to curse very bad. Very, very bad. So I would let them know certain things, you know. And they would just keep fretting me. I cut off all the hair, but you could still see the patches. And I said, somebody working or beyond me. You know, it could not be the alcohol. How could be something I love so bad be eating out all of my hair? You know, so I never once look at the alcohol. Anything at all that happened to me, I blame people, places, and things. You know, so I'm very grateful this morning and happy to be a part of this panel. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Yvonne. Wasn't that great? Our next speaker this morning is Liz W. from the Caymans.
Thanks. I'm Liz. I'm an alcoholic. Yes. My sobriety date is the 16th of March, 1982. And I'm pretty nervous. So I've got a few notes for dates in the Cayman Islands, but I'll start when I went out to the Cayman Islands when I was my mid-20s. I was pregnant. I had a little boy of a year old. That was in 1969. And I went on a banana boat, and I didn't know where I was going. I really didn't know where I was when I got there. And I don't think the Cayman Islands were on the map that we had. I thought they were in the Bahamas or something. Anyway, I wasn't drinking at all because I was pregnant. And a little bit closer, sorry. That's fine for me. I don't know about for them. That's good. Anyway, I got to the Cayman Islands, and I had the baby in 1970. And after that, I was invited to a party. My husband was a lawyer, and he was being welcomed to the island. And I went to the party, and it was a very West Indian one. They ate very late, and they had quite a lot of drinks first. And I had quite a few drinks, and I hadn't had a drink for a long time. I got drunk, and I went to the bathroom, and I went to sleep in the bath at my husband's boss's house. Not a good move. And that was the start of my life in the Cayman Islands, and it went downhill from there. Really bad. And I eventually came when I was 39, so I did quite a bit of drinking there, quite a bit of damage. And to my children and to the community and to myself, of course, most of all, to myself. I was very, very fortunate when I came in that AA had started there. The first person to start it was an international loaner who worked for the Met office, and he was called Dave D, and he registered the meetings in 1971 with the General Service Office. And there were two people who met in his house, and the meeting sort of was spasmodic until about 1972, when there were five people meeting at somebody's house, which was amazing. And between 1972 and 1976, there were not very many records kept, but we do know that Clarence Snyder, the brewmeister from the second edition of the Bibby book, who started AA in Cleveland, he had a spiritual workshop going on in Bradenton, and two people from the Cayman Islands went to it and invited him to come down, and he brought down six big books, the second edition of which I have one, which is wonderful. I didn't meet him by then. Obviously, I came in much later. And then in 1975, Chuck C., Dr. Paul, Al D., and four Al-Anons came to the island. And I have a little thing here that Dr. Paul wrote in the grapevine. He said, I've been to meetings in Singapore, Hong Kong, and Japan, but I think the most interesting was when Chuck C., Al D., and I were vacationing in the Cayman Islands, and we couldn't find any meetings. We were 12-stepping alcoholics there, and we decided we all needed a meeting. So we went to the local newspaper and got some publicity. Then we had a public information meeting, and then we got a regular meeting started. And far as I know, that meeting is still going. And it certainly is, but I think that what has really been our strength has been that we've always, and there are several people in this room who are responsible for keeping AA meetings going in the Cayman Islands when they were faltering. I'm looking at Wayne, I'm looking at Martin, I'm Betsy, there are a lot of people here, and we existed for visitors for a long time, and well, because of visitors, and now it's for visitors. We've been really blessed with having a tremendous growth in AA in the last 10 years. I've been in contact with one of the fairly early members from Boddentown, one of our groups, who now lives in Canada, and she kept the archives. And she introduced reading the traditions, which was very good, because when she came into the meetings, there was a piece of paper going around, a petition, asking for one of the councillors from the government to have his work permit extended. And this was an outside issue. And she wouldn't sign it. She said, "This is an outside issue." But he's very cross. "No, what's an outside issue?" We didn't know. So now we do know. But I digress a little bit. What I wanted really to say is that when I came in, there were 5 people in the meetings, and I knew most of them because I had been drinking with them. And I went with my dog because I thought nobody will think I'm going to a meeting if I take my dog. And I had a yellow car which I hid in the bushes because I had the only yellow car on the island. And I went in and they were talking about the big book and they were saying something like, if you don't want to get bitten by a snake, don't get into a snake pit. I don't know what they meant. And I sort of hung in there a little bit because nobody else wanted me around. And they were quite welcoming, understand it. But I hung around for a couple of years, on and off, on and off, and on and off, and it got worse. So then I went into treatment in Miami, at Miami, South Miami Hospital, and haven't had a drink since the day I went in there, which was fantastic. But my husband decided he'd had enough of me, and sober or drunk, he didn't want me around, and so he decided the island was a little too small for both of us, and I ought to go back to England. So I went back to England for several years, 3 or 4, which is where I met my present husband, who's sitting in the front row here, and we went back to the Cayman Islands, and we've been there ever since. So altogether, I think I've been there for 44 years. And seen this tremendous growth in AA. We now have an annual roundup, which is at the end of February, and several of you have been to it. We have Martin here who spearheads it, gets it going, gets us all going, and his wife Laura who does too. And we have a number of people here who come to it, which is what we want. Please continue to do that. Our first speaker was Clancy. I was at a meeting one wet August day 8 or 9 years ago, and I was the only person who had more than a year's sobriety, and I just was so discouraged. So I got home and telephoned Clancy, didn't speak to him, left a message at the midnight mission. I didn't know him very well at all. I'd just met him at a few conventions and said, "Could you come down to the Cayman Islands and speak to us about sponsorship?" And he did. I was amazed he did. And he has played a great part in my sobriety because I always had, in those days, tapes and now CDs in my car of him mainly because I couldn't get hold of any others, and of Dr. Paul and a few others. For 30 years, I don't think I've driven my car without having an AA CD or tape in it. And I have to say that I don't know what I would have done without them, because there wasn't a lot of sobriety around for a while. The first meeting, I went after I came out of treatment. They told me I had to go to a meeting every day. I said, "I can't go to a meeting every day. There's only 3 meetings a week. Start them." So that's what I did. And that meeting's still going, but for the first few months there was nobody at it. And so I read the big book. I sat upstairs and read the big book, and I had a terrible resentment against my ex-husband. And I know that somebody had said that in the big book there's a story about if you have a resentment against somebody, if you pray for them every day for 2 weeks for all the things you most want for yourself, your resentment will have gone. And I knew it was in the big book, but I didn't know where. And I read and I read and I read, and nobody came to the meetings, and I went on reading, and it's the next to last story in the big book. And then people started coming to the meetings. No, God is amazing. And he has so blessed the meetings with us. Really, we are so fortunate that we have now got 9 groups, 22 meetings a week. We have a BRAC attack, which we have the 3 islands, Grand Cayman, Cayman BRAC, and Little Cayman. And Cayman BRAC has a 1 person sober. She's been sober for 21 years, hasn't she, Martin? Yes. And she is so wonderful. But we now have something called the BRAC attack, which is where we get a group of people. Martin gets a group of people together, and they go over to the BRAC and have a barbecue. Let's wait for this to die down, because they're not clapping for me. A barbecue and meetings, and it's really a great boost for the island. Little Cayman's got 2 sober members, and I don't know how they do it, frankly. I don't know how they do it. Now, there was something else I was going to mention when all this clapping was going on, but I can't remember. Oh, gosh. Let me jog my memory. Oh, yes. Yes. We formed a district because we were very... We were sort of isolated, even on the island. And so Barbara, one of our stronger members from Boddentown, I think suggested that all the groups should get together with 1 representative at least once a month or so, just to talk about what was going on the island as a whole and to try and carry the message better. So that was formed in 1998. And in 2008, we joined Area 15, which has been a tremendous help to us, because quite a few of our Caymanian members had never been off the island and had certainly never been exposed to a large group apart from our roundup, which is 150 people. So getting to go to the quarterlies is quite amazing. There are 900 people at the quarterlies, and it's all service orientated. So we're really getting many more Caymanians are staying sober and are really getting involved in service, and it's a wonderful, wonderful thing to see it, really, because for years we didn't have very many Caymanians getting sober. There's a very strong ethic, church ethic among the older Caymanians, who were a bit shocked when their sons or daughters, husbands or brothers wanted to go to AA and thought it was a bit sinful. But now they're beginning to accept that it's an important part of the island, and I hope we're reaching the professional community a little bit. It's a struggle, but we're doing our best. And I can remember when I came in, I would say just, "Oh, help me, help me, help me, God, help me." And then as I got a little bit better, it was, give me serenity. Give me peace of mind. And now really it's becoming use me, because that's probably why I'm sober. You know, just use me. Thank you.
Thank you, Liz. Our third speaker this morning is Dorothy F. from St. Croix, U.S. Virgin Islands.
Okay, am I in the right position here? I don't want to be... think.
Yeah, I guess, yes.
Yep.
I'm Dorothy. I'm an alcoholic. And my home group is the Christian State Group in St. Croix. And my sober date is April 26, 1984. It's really amazing to be here tonight. And I really appreciate everybody speaking. I'm going to be going to Barbados when I get home. And so now I have a friend in Barbados. And the next time I'm going to advocate. This is a hiking group that I helped form, and I wouldn't have been able to do it if I hadn't been sober. So I was surprised at how many meetings there are in Barbados. My story was I came to St. Croix in 1970 to live with my husband on a boat, and a dream of mine always. And we did a lot of sailing, and I found out drinking was always important to me, but I didn't have a real drinking teenage life. I was pretty conservative in that. But I was always thought it was important to me, and I realized that drinking for me took me places I wanted to go, and it made me feel much better about myself. So that's kind of how I got to St. Croix. And then I found out there was so much rum there. And, you know, the evening cocktail was really quite acceptable, and I started really looking forward to that. And, you know, over the years, I just saw my drinking progress. I was very aware of it. And I think in my past, I've always been aware of AA, though I didn't really know about it. I had a friend whose father was in AA. When we were chartering, a man from New York had come down, and he didn't drink, and I couldn't understand why he didn't drink. I thought maybe he had been in an auto wreck or something and didn't drink. And I found out later, of course, he was in AA, and he had a lot to do with my getting sober. And I was in the hotel business, and I got into the hotel business by accident, and one of the things I really liked about it was that I could drink on the job, and which I did. And, you know, it was fun. We could walk around town all night, walking around on the islands. But I could see my drinking progressing, and I got another job in another hotel, and it was being renovated, and it didn't have a bar. So it was extremely stressful not having the bar on the property. And I quickly made sure we were building a bar. But it was during that time that I started drinking in the morning because I was so stressed out. And my drinking really took a turn on that day. And I started drinking virtually around the clock. Fortunately, I had insurance, and the insurance company wrote us a letter and said, you know, we will now cover rehab. And I had already gone to a psychiatrist to just tell him that I was drinking too much and I probably was an alcoholic, but I did not need to go to AA. You know, that was okay. So he gave me something to make me stop drinking. And a friend of mine who I had drank with on St. Croix, she was from New York, and she sort of taught me how to drink like a real lady, you know, vodka in the freezer. And she called up. She had left the island. She said, I've stopped drinking, and I'm going to AA, and it's really wonderful. And I said, well, I've sort of tried to stop drinking, but I haven't been very successful at it. And I went to New York, and actually my first AA meeting was in New York City. She took me there. And then I came back to the islands. And I was going to AA a lot. I was going. People were picking me up. I remember one of the founding people he's still in our group, 47 years sobriety. He would come and pick me up and take me to meetings. But I couldn't put down the first drink. You know, I couldn't put it down. And I listened to somebody who was from off island, and he was telling his story. And it was about going to a rehab and getting sober. So I went home to my husband, and I was pretty honest about how I drank. I certainly knew I was an alcoholic. I hadn't gotten the solution yet.
And I said, I think, you know, there's this place I could go, and I think I need extra help. And my husband ran down to the public health, got a brochure, and gave it to me, and I was on a plane in a few days to Pennsylvania. And that was my first rehab, and it was, I really appreciated not being having to drink. I appreciated, I thought they were going to make me sober. I really did. And they were kind of worried when they sent me off, you know, and went back to New York and celebrated my sobriety. I, you know, caught a plane in New York to come back at an AA meeting, and then went back to St. Croix and immediately drank when I got off the plane when I got home. You know, I hadn't changed. I hadn't worked any of the steps. I really didn't know anything about that. But it progressed pretty rapidly, my alcoholism. My husband told me I couldn't work in the hotel anymore. I could get drunk on the beach, but, you know, but he wasn't going to have me around. So I, being the self-supporting person I was, I called up the rehab and I said, I'm going to leave the island for good, and I'm going to stop by the rehab just to get a little refresher in how to be sober. And I did that. And the thing that happened then was, on that plane, I had been in and out of the program, and on the plane, I actually talked to myself a little bit and said, you know, let's do what they keep telling you, don't pick up the first drink, you know, and I actually did not pick up the first drink on that plane. And believe it or not, that simple act was such a relief. It was the first time I ever really did anything in the program. So that was my last drink. And made it to the rehab, really turned myself over to them, and did as much as I could to just do what they said. And I told them that I was going to stay. I wasn't going to go back to the islands particularly. I stayed 8 months. And that did give me a lot. And it showed me how to go to meetings. It showed me how to do the steps. And I was, the more I did, the more risk I took, the better I felt. So when I went back to St. Croix, I was 8 months sober. And I had really gotten a lot. And it was from AA in Pennsylvania. So one thing that happened, I got back and the bartender in my hotel was totally drunk. This was at night, and he was asked to close the bar, and he started saying, I'm not drunk, you're the one who has a problem. And he fell, passed out in the parking lot. And that for me would have been such a trigger to drink when I got home, you know. But what I did was I went down and closed the bar, put all the liquor away, didn't drink, because it was one of my sources of, you know, it was my private stash. And I, you know, that was another big breakthrough. You know, I could actually go through, be around it, and not have to do it. And the other thing was, the hurricane was coming by. This is all island stuff. And a hurricane was coming by, and I was sitting there with my husband being very kind of depressed and, you know, feeling sorry for myself. And, you know, I was thinking, you know, this is the time I really like to drink. And I just called up a friend of mine and I said, I need to go to a meeting. And that was the first meeting on island. And from that point on, you know, I've been going ever since. And I realized then that I am an alcoholic. It was pretty well proven. And I didn't really know what was going to happen, but I said, I'm an alcoholic and I'm just going to give my life over to AA. And that's what I did. And fortunately, our group had been started in 1962. There were two meetings a day. On the average, we have about from 50 to 70 members. So it was always there for me. And I went back and, you know, just started going to meetings as much as I could. And got into service right away. And just progressed like that. And that has really held me in good stead ever since. I did get into service, and I think I needed to get extra help from outside. And that's why I committed to that. I committed to being a GSR finally after a few years. And I was able to go to St. Thomas, go to the meetings there. Then I was able to go to Florida. And then I'm here, you know. And I had learned that early on, that I needed to branch out and really make AA my life. And for me, on an island, it's really important to you know, have contact with other people. And we don't get quite as many tourists on St. Croix as St. Thomas does. So they have an influx of tourists all the time. And I think that helps them a lot, because they get a lot of new fresh stories and fresh people. So during the 80s on St. Croix, one of the judges kind of decided that he was tired of putting a lot of people into jail because they had offenses, you know, drinking and drugging. So he arranged to have a rehab come to St. Croix called The Village from Florida. And that was a big change. Our group committed to supporting them. And it was really important for the island, because we always wondered, our group always was a constant membership, but always sort of stateside people. And, you know, we wondered why we couldn't get more people who, you know, were local people into our group. And that rehab helped a lot. And now our group is quite diverse, and we still are committed to taking a meeting up to the village every week. And they come to our meetings, they're driven, and so our group has swelled, and it's a lot of West Indians, or some Puerto Ricans, and a lot of stateside people, or people who have been there a long time. We have 15 meetings a week. We have 4 other meetings outside of ours. There are 2 groups on the island, Christiansted and Frederickstead. And one of our meetings is on the beach, which is really nice. It's an 11-step meeting, and it's lovely. And so I am just grateful to be here. And St. Croix and the Virgin Islands have been... I'm so grateful for AA having been there. I would never have been able to stay sober if it hadn't been for AA. So I'm going to end there. Thank you very much.
Let's give it up for these 3 great gals, huh?